Good morning. Today is Friday, April the 29th. Joining us this morning is Humboldt. I'm not doing the other. Or Cal Poly Humboldt, I suppose, is kind of ingrained in you. Provost, Jen Capps. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to be here.
A lot of people now are stumbling on saying SU after Humboldt.
All right.
It's starting to sink in on some of us.
Yeah.
When does the new gear come out?
It's out.
It's
out, yeah. We have new gear out for Cal Poly Humboldt as well as still Humboldt State gear as well, because we know people like the nostalgia. So you can get either right now.
Oh, so one is a collectible.
Ah.
And the other's available.
Exactly.
What are the diplomas this year going to say?
So the diplomas this year will say Cal Poly Humboldt unless a student wants to have it say Humboldt State University. So you get a choice because the students have a little extra privilege, I guess, this year because they were here during the change, the name change. Forthcoming in the fall.
I would prefer Harvard.
Right?
Maybe not, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Are you ready for our why do we say that?
Sure.
Why do we say hard-boiled? Not for the egg, but that someone is hard-boiled.
Oh, why? Because they're hard-headed? I don't know.
Should you ever be called hard-boiled, don't fret that you're being compared to an overcooked egg. The descriptive comes from not in the kitchen, but from the frontier wash house. Homemakers of that era used lye soap that didn't get clothes very clean. Once a month, a fastidious woman boiled her wash in an iron pot in order to remove all the stains. Then she boiled the best pieces in starch in her own kitchen. Inevitably, Sunday shirts sometimes emerged from the wash with too much starch. A fellow who put one on was more likely to joke that it was boiled so long that it became hard. Passing from stiffly starched clothing, the wash day expression attached to persons. As a result, hard-boiled men and women emerged as stock characters in the contemporary drama that we call business.
Huh. Learn something new every day.
There you go.
Interesting.
I could have talked about loophole.
Okay. Well.
Yeah, so, see, it wasn't all that bad.
All right.
Stay tuned for loophole sometime in the future.
Sounds good.
Oh, speaking of future, what's the enrollment like for next year? I'm hearing a bunch of different references to different numbers that some are wildly high and some are depressingly low, and I suspect that the reality is somewhere in between.
Yeah, good question. We had anticipated our enrollment to continue to be a little bit on the downslope through this year and then start to steady out and climb. However, we have steadied out and flattened our enrollment a year early, and the commitments from forthcoming kind of incoming students is on the rise. So that sounds probably like a vague answer, but it looks...
How about within 1,000?
Within 1,000? Boy... It's hard to say. I mean, we're at about kind of 5,800-ish students now, and
okay.
I think it'll be the same, if not more.
So somewhere maybe a little south of 6,000.
Yeah, I think so. But it's hard to tell because it's early. Students are committing and kind of making those decisions. But what we're seeing is a high level of applications and a high level of students indicating they're coming, much higher than we anticipated. So... Which I think has a lot to do with the Cal Poly transition.
Now, in the old days,
mm-hmm.
you could make that determination in August or September.
Mm-hmm.
Now, certainly things have changed an awful lot.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the school campuses throughout the state are impacted. Isn't that the word?
Uh-huh.
Sold out is kind of my reference.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
With Humboldt not being there, do you expect a lot of walk-ups early August saying, hey, you got space for me?
Yeah, I mean, it can't be sort of at the 11th hour exactly like that. I mean, there is an application deadline, so that has passed. We have a pretty late application deadline, but students can make that decision pretty late. So if we're a backup school or a student is on the fence, that we can accommodate them pretty quickly. We get a lot of transfer students, too, as well. So that we tend to see those transfer students enroll a bit more in the summertime.
JC kids, or is this from other four-year schools?
Both, but a lot of community college and JCs, yeah.
So they have a different calendar that they're working off of?
Yeah, and a lot of times it's after they get their 2-year degree, then they're seeking kind of to figure out that transfer pathway.
making sure that they got it in May.
You
got
it.
Is that what you're saying?
Exactly, right? 100%. So
perfect.
Yep.
So there could be another bums rush, another 400 or 500 kids.
We sure hope so.
What is the capacity? Yeah, foggy from the late 70s, early 80s when I was through.
Mm-hmm.
But I seem to recall 8,000, and then had been references to 10,000 in maybe a couple years earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the highest we've been, as I understand, is about 8,500, and that was maybe 6, 7, 8 years ago. And that was, it felt like too much at the time because didn't have enough housing, that sort of thing. It felt pretty crowded.
Not on campus, but the off-campus part?
A combination of both, yeah. Oh. So we have on-campus and support students in finding off-campus housing, too. You know, our goal is to get to 11,000 students, and that freaks people out sometimes. Like, where are they going to live? How are we going to support those students?
It still seems like a small campus. What was Davis, 25,000?
Yeah, something like that.
You know, and Chico's in that same neighborhood.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, we're still in the minor leagues.
Yeah.
Even at 10 or 11,000.
Exactly. And we don't aspire to be a 20,000 campus at all. I mean, this is a small community and it's not an area that probably could handle that. But when folks, I think, get worried about housing, that's why we go back to sharing that we have a lot of resources to support infrastructure and housing projects that are in the works right now.
Other than the 8-story building that Karen keeps talking about at the city? I mean, there's humor to it.
Fair. Yeah.
Okay. But I bet you there was a little chill that went through the community when the first reference, this could happen.
Uh-huh.
And because we, city, walked away from it, it's now the state and Humboldt can choose to do whatever they want. And there is no public input required.
Yeah, the politics.
You may still do it.
Right.
But not required.
Not required, but we really try to do a good job of talking with community members and getting buy-in from folks because that's the best way to move forward and be good partners.
So as you're looking at potential, whether it's dorms on campus or off, or I don't know, what are those townhouses that are there now, the cool painted ones over by where the soccer field is?
Mm-hmm.
What does it look like built out in 10 years with on-campus housing? Similar or a little different?
A little bit different. I mean, again, we seek to have some housing that's just off campus that's walkable. That's actually our first kind of campus housing project. Try to think about more future focused and what students and families, maybe older students, need as well. Also try to think about mixed use space so that it's not just housing projects, but also thinking about how do you co-locate academic space, classrooms, labs, dorms, food, that kind of
off
stuff
campus?
In the same space. No, on campus.
Oh, okay. The on-campus
stuff. And, yeah. Well, actually, and off campus. I mean, there's some positives to having that mixed-use space for community members as well, because then they can access coffee shops and different retail opportunities and that sort of thing.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Hi there, and good evening, and welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Weekdays at 7 p.m., it's the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Jim Bohannon. Join me here on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Jen Capps from Humboldt. I still can't do
that. That was a good
I still
say,
can't do the Cal Poly thing yet.
Humboldt is acceptable, though.
It'll
transition way to say it.
Thank you.
Okay.
The old hospital that's just off campus, sort of. That thing hasn't been used for a long, long time other than, I think, what, storage? Or maybe the botany class to see how quick weeds can grow in the parking lot. What's the plans for that?
I don't know.
Okay.
I have no idea.
It seems like there's all these properties or assets that are around that have been not needed. and then they become neglected, and then, you know, who knows what's going on. That would seem that they're going to get a refresher with all this and some attention, either be sold or utilized.
Yeah, I'm not sure with respect to that property, but I think there's a lot of opportunity to be able to do some broader refresh and thinking about what the community needs and what businesses and what services need, and kind of get together as a community and figure those pieces out collectively. Yeah.
Now, you've been around long enough now,
okay,
so you kind of have some authorship with some of the stuff that's going on.
Uh-huh.
But if this was the new arrival gen,
okay,
looking around, what would be your number one punch out on the physical side of the campus?
What do you mean, number one punch out?
We need to clean up or take care of or expand or mow the lawns at or something, you know, the visible stuff.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, I think some of it, frankly, is kind of when you're on the one-on-one, when you're passing campus.
You realize when you say that, we know you're a foreigner.
Uh-oh. Well, what am I supposed to say?
Well, on 101.
Ooh, okay.
Not duh.
Okay.
That's a Southern California Bay Area thing.
Oh, and I'm from Colorado.
Well, okay, probably. Well, what do you call I-80?
I-80?
So what would you call 101? 101,
okay,
right?
Yeah, you're right.
299, 36. Right. I mean, they're just...
Touche, you okay. Got me.
Well, just kind of, you know, helping the indoctrination to continue. That's all.
So I think one thing that we are working on with the city of Arcata is sort of that transition place between campus and the city, because there's some spaces that get pretty unruly and get lots of trash and that sort of thing.
Ugly?
Ugly, and you know, different hotel structures and stuff that are kind of run down. And so and some of that is almost sort of no man's land, or isn't City of Arcata, isn't Humboldt.
It's almost Caltrans,
exactly,
isn't it?
Yeah. Who doesn't really have a kind of local footprint here? So trying to work to, because that transition of students going to town, as well as if people actually, as we want to invite more people onto campus, it can be kind of a tough place. So that would be the one thing.
So you want to cut down all the Monterey pines. Good move.
Shouldn't say that, but make it more aesthetically
pleasing. Let me know if you need some help.
Okay. All right. You got me.
Despise those trees.
Huh.
Oh, just, yeah, purple passion.
Okay.
And others, I'm sure, are very passionate about them, you know, kind of like the eucalyptus trees out by the old Arcata Redwood.
All right.
Okay, fine, whatever.
That's funny.
The types of students that are applying.
Mm-hmm.
With the transcripts, with the profiles, and I don't know how much of that you're privy to, are you seeing a different kind of student who's excited about going to a Cal Poly or the programs that have already been kind of rolled out for this fall?
Yeah, I'd say it's a mix. So there is a huge interest in particular with our engineering programs. And shout out to our engineering faculty, who really did a great job of creating sort of a single pathway to multiple types of engineering degrees that we're going to launch in 2023. They did
kind of like a tree.
Oh, it's
phenomenal. Common, and then it branches at the end?
It's awesome.
Very cool.
It really is. It's basically students have to say, I'm interested in engineering, and there's that first year. And then there's multiple engineering programs that they can kind of choose into a little bit later once they get exposed to the different types of engineering. A lot of universities and colleges require students to select a specific type of engineering right when they get there. Students don't know enough about engineering to be able to pick that. And engineering degrees have so much required courses that if you make kind of a wrong turn and take the wrong class, it can extend your time. So it's a really good creative way to set up the program. But we're getting a ton of interest for engineering. The other thing I'd say is we continue to get, but it's elevated and I think it escalated, with students who are interested in the environment and sustainability and those pieces. Like Humboldt's known for that.
The shots. Kind of part of the campus.
The shot stuff as well. And then what also is neat, this isn't about students as much, but we're doing a lot of faculty recruitment, obviously, to staff these new programs. We are getting kind of world-renowned faculty and bringing on just the most amazing faculty with a lot of really interdisciplinary bits of knowledge, things like data scientists that can work through problems with many different types of disciplines and aspects, thinking about ocean and environment and forestry, but then taking the data. Some of it's literally above my head, and it's amazing stuff that people are doing. Yeah.
Why? Because of the Polytech designation, or because there's just an expansion of the faculty? I mean, it sounds like it's these aren't people that would have had interest in being part of Humboldt State 15, 20 years ago, these profile people.
Yeah, I think it's two things. I think it's the Polytech, and I also think it is we did a little bit of a different approach to hiring this year and did a sort of a it's a strange thing to say, but sort of like a it's called like a cluster hire approach, but it's basically taking faculty from pretty different disciplines and putting them together to work together to bring in diverse faculty. And so what we're getting is people that we wouldn't ordinarily get because you have Native American studies faculty and engineering faculty working together on the same search. So we're being able to pull these really unique profiled people.
So you got a team going
exactly.
Rather than everybody from the same area.
Exactly. And
you could have said it that way. It would have been a lot easier. It's 8:30.
Forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Jen Capps from Humboldt. See?
Getting better. I'm
putting the emphasis there instead of Humboldt.
You're getting better.
Stop enough. All right. Cal Poly Humboldt. There you go. Now she's smiling.
Smile is not coming through on the radio, yeah, but it's here.
Yep. Oh, it does when we hear your dulcet tones.
Uh-huh.
For somebody who's an alum at Humboldt and they come back,
mm-hmm.
So let's say there's actually a connection with Humboldt through the Alumni Association,
mm-hmm.
and whatever the event is attractive enough so you actually get people coming back
mm-hmm.
for an event, whatever it might happen to be. And let's say you had 10,000 people.
Okay.
What percent are going to be stunned and amazed versus just kind of being curious about what this new Humboldt is all about?
Oh, I think that's a tough question. I would say more than half would be stunned and amazed. I think the other half, well, maybe not. You know, there's always 10% that you can't change their mind. But I'd say the next 40% after a little exposure to kind of our future goals and how things are changing would go, oh, wow. I'm so proud to be a part of the institution and call myself an alumni. And we're getting tons and tons of outreach and interest and engagement and wanting to participate and re-engage in the institution because of our transition.
Folks that hadn't been there before?
I think folks that had been less engaged or not really engaged. Yeah.
Are now reaching out and saying this is kind of fun stuff.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, I would suspect. And then once the curriculum starts being better known.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to tap into some stuff there that I think would be really kind of intriguing for a lot of people.
Absolutely. I think the Polytech designation, again, helps to amplify. There's really good curriculum that we already have that people couldn't find. You know, they couldn't identify the institution and what they would get out of the institution and the cool programs that we have. And we literally do. We have research that is world-renowned at the institution. And classes and instructors that are phenomenal. People just don't know it.
Do you think the community is going to take Humboldt more seriously?
Well, I don't know. You might be the better person to answer that question, but I hope so.
Some of us have taken classes. Some of us have graduated. Some of us have had their, our kids.
Mm-hmm.
Others have just kind of shown up for ball games and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk to the old timers, they would say the kids coming out of Humboldt at that time were primarily teachers and
mm-hmm.
and forestry related.
Sure.
And then we had the granola
mm-hmm.
and grape nuts crowd for
sure.
a while. Okay, and then things kind of have evolved and changed, and I think some of the stereotypes that are thrown out aren't of the kids
mm-hmm.
themselves. It's of those that are just kind of in a college community.
Mm-hmm.
I would suspect, though, that this is because it's going to be different. There's going to be different interactions in the community from the student body, from the faculty also.
Mm-hmm.
When you're selecting faculty members, are you looking for those that are going to engage with the community or those that are going to stay on the 15th floor of the tower, do the research, and do it very well, but then go home and the community never interacts with those individuals?
No, I think very much it's about recruiting faculty who are connecting with the community and meeting the community needs, the workforce needs. The other thing I'd say about the research is really the emphasis with the term that we use a lot is science-serving society. So how do we – so science-serving society, so what that means
that
is –
it sounds like Sally on the seashore.
All right. We can say three times fast and see if you can make it work. But really, like, what are the local problems? What are the North Coast problems? What are the issues that exist, and how do we deploy researchers, faculty, students to try to work with community members to help to solve what those issues are?
So how is that determined? Do you guys do individual studies, or do you talk like right now with the political cycle that's on?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take a rocket scientist to find out what the top three or four issues are.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't changed in the last little bit, but there may be a little bit more interest.
Mm-hmm.
In being able to engage and do something with the school.
Right.
Is that the stuff that you're looking for?
Yeah, I think that's certainly part of it. I mean, engaging ourselves in different task force, work groups, those sorts of things, and working in partnership rather than siloing ourselves on campus to just decide what the issue is, but rather working with local people and local officials and that sort of thing to determine those pieces. So, yeah. So, I mean, as an example, I joined. I haven't had attended a meeting yet, but there's a working group through Arcata related to homelessness, right? So really working through and trying to address and deal with issues related to homelessness. And so I was at a meeting, and I was like, well, could I join your group? I'd love to have the university help to support efforts there. And they're like, you would? You want to be...
Instead of being drafted, you're volunteering.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And there's a lot of evidence of faculty and staff that are wanting to do that and sort of breaking down those barriers.
I would think that if we talk about the old town and gown battles,
mm-hmm.
that's how it happens. The fellow that was the basketball coach when I was going through,
mm-hmm.
Jim Cosentino, he would look for kids who had talent.
Mm-hmm.
But just as importantly, would they fit into the community? Would they be an embarrassment to the program,
mm-hmm.
or would they be something that, or someone rather, that would complement the program?
Mm-hmm.
And you look at some of the high power athletic programs, and it doesn't seem like those are particularly concerns for a lot of these different schools. But it sounds like that's something you're trying to weave into the fabric of Cal Poly Humboldt.
Absolutely, well done on the name.
Thank you very much. Yeah, but I got a one-word answer, so maybe it didn't work out that well. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
Hi, folks. Fly Humboldt wants to remind you that flying local is buying local. And with airlines going to seven cities serving hundreds of destinations, it's easier than ever to get to where you want to go from Humboldt County's airport. That's right. You can fly on American, Avelo, and United Airlines nonstop to Denver, Hollywood, Burbank, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Flying has never been more convenient or affordable. So book your trip now. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this Friday morning with Jen Capps. Jen, when you talk about the interaction and the engagement with the school into the community
mm-hmm.
and the top issues, all right, jobs, housing affordability, drugs, mental health, or the walking wounded, depending on how one wants to look at that,
mm-hmm.
And I would throw in there also a laissez-faire culture that has permitted a lot of this stuff to take root and, mm-hmm. and flourish a little bit. How involved do you want the school to get in some of these areas? Because there are those that would embrace and there are those that would cast stones.
Mm-hmm.
How do you encourage that involvement, but also realize that there's a balancing act here and we want to help out the school as much as the community and vice versa?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we want to be involved. I think that it's critical for a university, especially in kind of small town rural environment, it's critical for us to lend ourselves to be involved in solving back to the science serving society piece. But I think healthcare is obviously a critical issue in this area. There's a lack of access. Access is a thing I say all the time, whether it's access to education and gaining access to Humboldt for students, non-traditional students, that sort of thing. But health is similar as well, because as you know, and as I well know, being, you know, under 2 years living in the community, finding practitioners, getting in to see somebody, that sort of thing is really tough. And, you know, my background being a psychologist and mental health practitioner, it's a critical issue in this area as well. And so if the university has some good kind of key starting points with respect to building out health programs. You know, we brought back the nursing program. College of the Redwoods has a nursing program, but we have other health programs as well. And so really our interest, and probably starting this summer, we'll go a little bit bigger on putting out in partnership with community members more of a detailed strategic plan of how we can work together in partnership to figure out how we can train more healthcare workers, how we can keep them local. And then think about what some of those bigger sort of gnarly problems are around health, particularly in rural areas like this one.
Yeah, I would suspect that because of where we are,
mm-hmm.
proximity to the Bay Area,
yeah,
but also the ruralness,
mm-hmm.
Having the Indian community
mm-hmm.
in the area, that there's a whole bunch of areas if somebody wanted to specialize, they've got lots of choices.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a huge opportunity. And like I said, we have some expertise already in-house. It's just really linking to where the workforce needs are. Obviously, nursing is one that everybody can identify. But
massive.
But I think, you know, mental health practitioners. The other one, a term that I throw out a lot, is healthcare navigators. So people that sort of a right out of college kind of job where it's basically somebody that works in a clinic, a hospital, for an insurance company, it doesn't matter, but helps people navigate the healthcare system. So imagine...
Kind of like an advisor or counselor.
Yeah. So, I mean, imagine for yourself if you have to get, like, knee surgery or something. How do you get the authorization? How do you get set up for the surgery? How do you... Those kinds of things. It is a hassle. It is really hard to navigate those systems. And for people that have some skills and some education, fare better maybe than those that have more barriers.
At least you're familiar with the terminology.
Oh, my gosh. But it is
it's
really...
It's a full-time job
sometimes. It is. Yeah. It is. And it's incredibly frustrating. And there's great an academic program that really teaches people how to do that. And when hospitals and healthcare organizations bring on that kind of role, it really elevates the productivity, the efficiency of healthcare agencies and the wellness of patients, right? So,
well, I just the emotional calming,
mm-hmm.
something like that, just as simple as it sounds. I mean, certainly not a sexy job, but you think about what it really could mean for somebody. And
yep.
then let's say it's the first time, or let's say it's an older person,
mm-hmm.
or you mm-hmm. know, there's still enough variabilities in there to customize it for someone.
Definitely. And one of the ways that we, Cal Poly Humboldt, is going to seek to kind of go after healthcare and kind of be engaged in the healthcare area, I think, is really sort of a whole person approach to wellness, or more of a lifestyle medicine approach. And really what that means is, you know, 80% of health-related issues can be interfered with or prevented by lifestyle choices. So it doesn't sound all that sexy, right? But if you do stress management, if you eat well, if you exercise, those types of things.
Don't smoke, et cetera,
you can yeah, you can prevent a lot. But the healthcare systems generally are more intervention or treatment focused versus how do we help to keep people healthy.
Yeah, post-event rather than pre-event.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And so when you train nurses, when you train physicians and health navigators and such in helping people to get their ailments treated, but also to help educate and inform about how then the next time around they could do something that likely would prevent.
Or their kids.
Exactly. Yep.
No, he's not even paying attention. I would suspect a lot of that isn't hidden knowledge. It's just not as readily available.
No, it's kind of drawing the lines between the information and having people be able to access and understand ways in which they can be healthy. And so sometimes people think, I need a gym membership, I need all this fancy equipment. You actually don't.
Yeah, as my bride tells me, get up, move.
Stand, walk around, right?
Yeah.
You know, those types of things.
Yeah.
So
I think it looks like it's about time for us to stand up and walk out of here.
All right.
All right.
I'm on it. Thank you.
Thanks for coming by. Enjoy the weekend.
All right, you too.
See everybody on Monday.